Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Robert, Charlotte has a new look, Miss WrestleMania, comes back after Mania. Turns out she's now main eventing Raw, which is cool. You know, let's not lose sight of the fact that it wasn't that long ago that it was a big news story when women main evented an episode of Raw. And Rhea Ripley gets a big win at WrestleMania. She's at ringside. She is instigates a controversial finish in the main event in a way that I don't think is particularly admirable. And it left me wondering, am I supposed to like Charlotte or am I supposed to like Ripley? And then Charlotte attacks the referee and it confirms we're supposed to like Charlotte or not. But anyway, Robert, what do you make of the booking of Rhea Ripley coming out of Mania in particular as the champion? Because as much as Charlotte's got the new look and she's a big star and I get they're leaning on her right now, Ripley is the potential difference maker, a new blood, a new face on the rise, and we don't know anything about her as just a regular Raw viewer if you're not someone who followed her in NXT. And they haven't even connected what she's doing on Raw to a lot of what we learned about her and knew about her in NXT. I'm just a little frustrated watching this play out, seeing it as sort of a lost opportunity to direct viewers at least to invest and have an emotional reaction to what they're watching.
Yeah, you're right. This does seem to really be all about Charlotte. That is the central focus here. And Charlotte's feud with Asuka. I really feel like Rhea is a bit of a bit player here. And as you said, that is the frustrating part because she's the most ill-defined up to this point of any of the three women. And this goes back all the way to the match at Mania where I think her face and heel alignment, which was something I think was an overall thing that happened on the show tonight, where it still gets a little confusing. Obviously, we know Charlotte's supposed to be a heel, and I think Asuka is the default face here. But it's that unknown, and not unknown in a mysterious way where we want to know more and they're not giving everything away. It feels right now that you could really have anybody holding that title. There's nothing particularly unique that they're bringing out of Rhea at this point.
Is interfering in a match that Charlotte's about to legitimately win? Okay, like why did they book that? What's the psychology? Is there some reason we're supposed to be like, oh yeah, I like Ripley because she just screwed Charlotte out of a win? Like, what's the psychology of that?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense because if anything, if you're going back to the longest term booking, it would mean more to Asuka to get that victory here. You're not taking something away from Charlotte that she's never had. She's beaten Asuka on several different occasions, so I don't think the momentum would really be there to be like something that Charlotte would have to care about. So it really, all that whole segment really just seems filler to get to what we had at the end with Charlotte beating up the refs and to, you know, enhance whatever stage of a heel she's in at this point.
Yeah, and the psychology of honestly, is Ripley supposed to be a heel and Asuka's the only babyface here, or are we supposed to be okay with, like, is Ripley the babyface? I just genuinely don't – I'm genuinely don't know if they are trying to steer us in a certain direction.
It feels purposely ambiguous, Wade, and I think that's kind of frustrating. Just because of how the other characters are framed. I mean, I think Charlotte was a face, like, not that long ago, although she turns – so often, and even Asuka in her own right has been sort of ill-defined, and so you add another piece that has those similar parameters, and this isn't really like a shades of gray situation. It's kind of when everyone comes out unlikable, there's not necessarily a shade of gray there, because and again, like the Rhea thing, like she is the champion, she got the big win at WrestleMania. You think we would need to know a little bit more about her, or she would have a more defined lane at this point, and she just simply doesn't.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I mean, I think they see Charlotte as a star. They see Asuka as a established top-tier wrestler, incredible. And they see Ripley as someone who will get a rub from being, you know, winning the title right away and Charlotte kind of chasing her. But I was watching Ripley come out at the beginning of the match or right before the bell rang and just thinking, what a lost opportunity. I mean, can you imagine other bookers that in other companies and other eras – getting their hands on Rhea Ripley as an on-air main event act and having her debut be as ill-defined and listless as this has been. They're just presenting her. They're not promoting her. They're putting her on TV. Oh, she won the title. She's a big deal. It's like Vince McMahon and the writers have no idea what to do with her, or they just can't be bothered because they're still in some weird post-WrestleMania funk where I don't sense they're feeling particularly inspired. So it's frustrating.
It's weird because they want to use her too. That's what's weird about it too. It's like it's not one of these situations where we just don't see her for 2 months and all of a sudden she picks back up on TV. They clearly have some sort of use for her. They're just not really executing or showing their hand in any meaningful way right now.
Yeah, exactly. It's frustrating. Anyway, let's pause there. Let's introduce ourselves and get the calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, April 19th, 2021. I'm Wade Keller, host of the program, the editor and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter. Go VIP and read over 1,700 back issues, including fascinating behind-the-scenes stories on Steve Austin's rise and run on top. I talked in depth about an October 1998 Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter cover story, available in PDF and alt-text format in the VIP site archives. I talked about that at length on yesterday's VIP-exclusive Wade Keller Hotline, and for the first time ever went into details on Vince McMahon calling me within a few days of that newsletter coming out to take issue with a specific word and characterization of something that was going on behind the scenes in WWE at the time with Steve Austin, and as related to The Rock and Undertaker, locker room politics, and I put it in historical perspective and relayed Vince's argument and also talked about what my counter argument to him was in a pretty long conversation we had over it. So that's just one of the perks you get as a VIP member, a chance to walk through history with our contemporaneous coverage as a great supplement to last night's A&E documentary biography on Stone Cold Steve Austin, a two-hour program that premiered last night. One of many thousands of reasons to go VIP, pwtorch.com/goVIP for full details on all the ad-free podcasts compatible with Apple Podcasts native app now in 2021 and over 1,700 back issues, ad-free access to our website, and tons of cool VIP exclusive podcasts. Plus, you get to hear this show and the PW Torch daily casts with the ads and plugs removed. That alone is a perk worth the price of VIP membership if you're a fan of our free podcast lineup. Speaking of which, the other voice you hear is a host of one of those said daily casts, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. Robert Vios joins me again here in the co-host chair following Raw. Robert, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Wade. I always like talking wrestling with you, and I think this was a good episode of Raw. We have a lot to chew on for discussion. I'm going to clarify there. And I'm always excited to get the callers' perspectives because they tend to steer the show in ways that I never usually predict.
I'm curious what people think of the show. Last week, the expectations were high for The Rock Romania. And, you know, we didn't get a lot. This week, I think expectations were lower after a less than stellar Raw after Mania and then a pretty listless SmackDown. I still feel like something weird is going on with WWE booking right now. It doesn't feel motivated. I feel as if senioritis. I think WWE thinks, to extend this analogy, fans coming back to the building is college freshman year, and this is the final stretch of Thunderdome. And so they are sort of having senioritis in that they already got into college. They know it's coming up, you know, down the line. They're going to go to college. And this is just sort of coasting through, trying to make it look like an honest effort. And I think they're coming up short. You add to that the mysterious disappearance of AJ Styles and Amos, the new Raw Tag Team Champions. And then you have, like, Retribution, who were buried, now being sort of a semi-centerpiece novelty new in the mix. It just feels kind of weird, Robert. What's your vibe on the show this week and last week overall?
Yeah, last week's, I think, was a major letdown. Regardless if the roster WrestleManias are good or bad, they always feel really newsworthy and noteworthy. And as you mentioned, both shows last week were very listless. I was a little bit dreading doing this show with you just for this week because the Raw after, traditionally, I feel like is a pretty lame show. And then you would generally have that European tour that would come closely after that, which are, you know, basically house shows that are on Raw. This year is weird because it's not necessarily that, where you have decent matches that don't mean anything. This year it feels like you said, a bit of that senioritis, and also the time to get to Backlash or WrestleMania Backlash, whatever they're calling it, it feels like maybe slightly longer than normal, and they're really stretching these things out to the point where I don't know if they're stretching them out intentionally or they don't quite have a concrete plan of where they're going. You saw a lot of the same people multiple times, whereas other people were missing, which has been a theme, I think, on Raw for a couple of months now. The show seems scattered. The show seemed like it didn't have one voice that was leading everything. It felt like even though there was some connectivity, a lot of stuff that was very much in isolation tonight.
Yeah, so we'll march through our thoughts on the segments you're talking about, Robert, in more detail. And as you say, let the callers lead the way. Speaking of which, let's give out the phone numbers. The phone number to give us a call if you're listening to our live stream right after Raw is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad to indicate that you want to join the conversation. That'll flag you on our switchboard. By the way, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net will join me for a special Tuesday flagship edition of our Blue Logo Show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. This is our Red Logo Show, our post-show format where we take calls and live stream our shows. The Blue Logo Show is a more traditional podcast format, and Jason Powell joins me for an early flagship this week. Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net and the Pro Wrestling Boom Podcast. If you have questions or comments about any topic, WWE, NWA Power, Ring of Honor, Impact Wrestling's pay-per-view coming up, AEW, NXT's move to Tuesdays, on and send those questions to WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Get them in right away. I'm recording with Jason early on Tuesday afternoon, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. That's also the email if you're listening to us live and want to contribute thoughts or questions on tonight's Raw. That also applies to this Wednesday's Dynamite and this Friday's SmackDown. Every week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, while you're watching the shows, even if you can't live stream our show right afterwards and you just download it the next morning, we still encourage you to participate with emails. That's WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. All right. Let's make sure that I had to upgrade my bunch of software, and I'm trying to make sure that everything is working with the new with my new recording software here. And there we go, I think. Yeah, there we
are. No pressure. You're just live. No pressure.
No one's going to hear any of this, Robert. Our post-production team is fantastic. But the live people get to hear. But that's part of the fun. No ads when you listen live either. You get to hear us work through new equipment, and you don't have to sit through commercial breaks if you're not a VIP member. All right. So first up on the phone banks is 802. 802, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Nick from Brattleboro, Vermont. How you doing, Robert? Wade, control Z. That always works.
I'm on a Mac, and my new laptop, I said this Friday after SmackDown. I was so distracted watching SmackDown, trying to get everything working in time for Friday's show. My M key stopped working. It's under warranty, so I'm not going to pop the M off and void the warranty. So I brought it in. Oh, yeah, just no problem. We'll fix it. It'll take 2 to 3 weeks. Got to send it to California or wherever. So I'm trying to get my iMac, which is already having problems because I'm due for a new iMac. That was already having problems. So I spent a bunch of time this weekend trying to figure out why it was just churning so slowly. And I finally got it working, but then some old software didn't work once I upgraded everything. So anyway, yeah, thank you. Thank you, Nick. I got more than a control Z will solve, but so far so good. Knock on wood.
Just to touch base on the what seems to be the main topic of the night is the whole Charlotte Ripley Asuka situation. I think part of the problem is that they've so destroyed the rest of the women's division with having them all in tag teams getting beaten or trading some wins with Shayna and Nia, that what you would normally have would be, say, Naomi going up against Rhea, and however you want to position Rhea, heel, babyface, whatever, you know, she could come out, they could have a good 4 or 5 minute match. Rhea could come out looking strong against a wrestler who's respected and liked by viewers and stuff, and start building her character. Instead, she's saying, I think she said like 10 words tonight, and she just came across as a punk to me tonight. And not even an appealing punk in the sense of, she's a badass. It's just, she was just like, and then, as I said, there's no backstory either. You mentioned they should do a 2 minute vignette on what happened last WrestleMania and subsequent to it with Charlotte beating Rhea back for the title, and they just haven't done it. And I got to believe Charlotte's, if Strowman gets a month for headbutting, 6 months for beating the crap out of a ref?
Oh, good. I mean, that's such a good point. There's no way that Charlotte should be around for weeks after that. I have no faith that that's going to be the case. But, I mean, attacking a referee like that, that should be grounds for a major suspension. And it wasn't just like one move, like you're pointing out, Nick. I mean, it was a brutal beatdown. I mean, a relentless beatdown. So I don't know what they're – I mean, I'm intrigued by – I like Charlotte's new look. I'm happy that she's got a new interview style. I think that this is the right move for her at this stage of her career, at her age, with what she's accomplished and where she is relative to other people on the roster right now. I like the refresh a lot, and I think it's an improvement. And I think she's a natural heel. So I'm glad she's absolutely, positively – almost for sure a heel, because you never know what WWE. It's like the Young Bucks in AEW. You say absolutely positively, and then you remember the six other times you said it, and you were wrong. But I really do feel like that's clearly what they're doing now. So, but you're right, Rip. There's a backstory with Ripley, and they can't be bothered. And it's so disappointing Ripley hasn't been around that long, but it feels like quite a while that we've been anticipating her becoming a star on a larger national stage, and it really is disappointing given the potential. Robert, over to you for thoughts on that.
No, absolutely. I would echo a lot of the thoughts that you said, because I'm with you and I'm on board with the new direction of Charlotte. Because while I always have appreciated Charlotte's work as a heel, it was pretty stale, and it has been for quite some time. She was pretty unevolved as a character. So I liked the freshening up, and I think she executes it. She executes it very well. But as we're both pointing out, the Rhea is getting lost in this, and as the caller pointed out too, with all three women in there, there's multi-year WrestleMania stories to build on that have happened that you can draw from history on, and they're simply not doing it or not going to it enough. And I think tonight, throughout the show, you saw a lot of chances of trying to rehabilitate characters after being presented in a certain way and then trying to rehabilitate them. That rehabilitation process, as your friend Todd Martin will always say, is very difficult when you peg a character in a certain way. And I kind of think that's what's going to happen with someone like Rhea, because part of someone like Rhea is there has to be this special kind of exclusivity to her in the way that she acts. And she really... There's nothing that she's presented as special. She could be any person on the roster right now, could just have the role she's in. Her being Rhea Ripley and what she brings to the table is not accentuated in any way in this current iteration of how they have her.
Yeah. Nick, what else have you got?
Just real quick, also on Charlotte, and this is just purely visual, I think she looks so great. I know she had her personal surgery, and she looks so much more athletic now than she did before, where she was basically trying to be a Vince vixen, if you will. I think she looks great, and I love that she's really going into the heel, but you can't have her beating up the refs. My other point was Venk. Did you notice, or was I crazy and I couldn't tell who was talking, but it seemed that Byron and Corey were carrying most of the play-by-play tonight, and it might have been that Venk, he called the Viking Raiders finisher the Viking Express, and then Corey explicitly said Viking Experience. And then, like, 3 seconds later, he says Viking Express again. And then it's almost like you heard, like, almost nothing from him, and Corey was handling all the play-by-play.
I was thinking late in the show, why, because Corey Graves happened to be a wrestler, can he not shift to being the main play-by-play guy? Because he is more equipped to do it than Venk. I think it is a it's only been 2 weeks, but it's enough evidence to say he's not an instant plus to the show. He's going to have to grow into this spot to earn it as a long-term position. These first 2 weeks haven't been good, and I would say he's maybe regressed. And I noticed that there was, when Charlotte and Oscar were on split screen, they're showing him warming up, going into a break. Venk started talking, and they just started, they cut away from him because he was just, you can imagine Kevin Dunn, I mean, who was behind his hiring, and Vince signed off on it, but whoever just in the truck, like, cut to break. Like, he just was, I don't want to say he's rambling, but he was talking more than you're supposed to at that moment. And rather than just kind of wait it out, it's almost like they embarrassed him by cutting him off mid-sentence to go to break. I agree with you. Saxton and Graves carried him last week. I don't think he came particularly inspired this week. I thought it was the most listless opening to a Raw episode ever. Like, he introduced Raw like it was a golf tournament. And or a baseball game, which is his background, you know, his background, or a studio show, you know, like, this is Raw. You're supposed to manufacture energy because you're in the Thunderdome. And he didn't convey excitement. So I just don't know if this is his thing. You know, it doesn't mean he's a bad person, not a nice guy. I don't sense he brings any special historical knowledge, any particular readable excitement or enthusiasm for the product, and not really even a noticeable working knowledge, a sufficient working knowledge to not receive criticism or doubts that he's the right guy for this job early on. Robert, what did you think of him last week and this week?
Yeah, I've been mostly unimpressed by him. And I do always put the caveat that just no matter who they get, nobody's really that good in that role. It's kind of an undesirable position. But the enthusiasm thing, I think, is very, very relevant. And if you followed his work at ESPN, you know, he's one of those guys. He was very smooth. He was not whatever he would do the stuff on ESPN News, the radio show, not a guy that is like bombastic in your face, you know, like your buddy Mark Madden. He's not really that style of broadcaster. And that doesn't necessarily fit to be the lead announcer on a wrestling show. You maybe can have that if you're, you know, a guy you're throwing to. But as you said, the lead announcer like that needs to kind of be a bit of a hype man. That is part of the role as they sell the product. And the other thing that I thought was glaring, and look, you know, the Viking Experience, Viking Express, it's not like full Mike Adamley yet, where he's just messing everything up. I do get the impression, though, that the product knowledge is pretty limited. Yeah. And I think that is kind of showing through because he doesn't seem to have a lot to fall back on, especially as experienced as he is as a broadcaster. I mean, even the coach, who just became a disaster eventually on Raw, you could at least tell he sort of knew who and what he was talking about until he kind of got in his own head and thought a little too highly of himself after a while. But I see somebody that like whatever the job is, it's about 10% too hard right now. And it's hard to get over a bad first impression in wrestling, especially on the announcer. The announcers are in your ear for a whole 3 hours and you kind of have to have it or you don't. And it's not looking good right now for Bird.
I actually thought Corey and Braxton were worked great, and it would actually be interesting to have the color commentator be the heel. You know, I think they had a great little dynamic going, and obviously they've worked together for years. And I don't know whether they like each other, hate each other, but I mean, they definitely had something there.
They also have the option to hire somebody with vast wrestling knowledge, with a really good play-by-play voice, who can be enthusiastic, bring product knowledge, historical knowledge, current knowledge, and just be a good fit. Like, you don't think there's like 20 people out there who would love to have that job who actually yeah. check a bunch more boxes in their first 2 weeks. I'm not saying get rid of Vinket at all, but I'd be studying hard if I were him. I'd be practicing. I'd be trying to figure out what's not working and do I have it in me to be better than I've been the last 2 weeks. For last week was nerves, and he's just thrown out there with very little experience, but he's got to show that he can improve quickly or he's going to be a problem. I mean, I think the play-by-play voice is very important, and WWE is going to – viewers are going to reject somebody who they think knows a lot less about the product than they do.
Yeah.
And that he just thinks, well, because I'm an ESPN or an MLB guy or, you know, a legit sports guy, fans are going to go, you got hired because you're a legit sports guy. We don't care about that. Make wrestling more enjoyable for us. And we want to know that you love this as much as we do. And very few announcers portray that. You know, Todd Grisham was just, he looked like he didn't want his friends at college to see him. You know, like, oh, God, I'm not taking this seriously. It's just a paycheck. Like, there's people who just, and I'm not saying that was his attitude, but that's certainly how he came across. But as Robert points out, the way you're produced and the framework you're given, it's limiting, but you've got to find a way to fight through that to win over the audience. And I just don't think Vank is gonna win people over. I think he's a detriment to the product if he doesn't get better, because fans are going to resent his presence and he's not going to be enhancing storylines. Part of it is give him a little more room to work and find his own personality. In a sense, I mean, these are the weeks to just let him swim without a life preserver of Graves and Saxton carrying things. If I'm WWE, I pull them back a little bit and see what Vent can do, and then he'll know what he needs to work on in the next week. Hopefully he's putting in a ton of overtime watching the 10 best wrestling play-by-play announcers of the last 40 years, taking notes, practicing, and showing up better next week. I mean, if he's collecting the paycheck, he should be doing that to get better and bring something to the table to earn the respect of his colleagues and the bosses who hired him.
Yeah, Nia Jax might have shared the pictures of Vince that she has with him for him to get the job. I don't know. But last point, then I'll let you guys go and take some other calls, is do you think – actually, I got two questions, and then I'll hang up and let you guys answer them. Do you think that the demasking of T-Bar and Mace will – lead to the reemergence of Dio Madden and Dominic Dijakovic, you know, now that their masks have been taken off and Dijakovic actually has some hair again? And then also, I was just wondering if from any of your sources, I was reading Variety the other day, and no one seems to know how many views of WrestleMania there was on Peacock, and I was just wondering if any of your sources have dumped to you. So with that, I will let you guys go and have a good night and a good week.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. I thought it was noteworthy that WWE Tonight on Raw was bragging about the billion views they had through social media and all that stuff of WrestleMania week. Like, that means anything to anybody. I mean, it's an impressive number, but what people want to hear is, was WrestleMania the most watched WrestleMania of all time? And if they're not saying that this week, that's not a good sign. Peacock should know pretty instantly that more people watched WrestleMania 37 than watched any other WrestleMania. WWE didn't send me a press release on it. AEW sent me a press release bragging about their numbers last week. WWE's not sending me any press releases bragging about anything. Peacock has exclusive access. That's not something that Nielsen tracks or any third parties know. Robert, I mean, maybe they're saving it for next week or on SmackDown on Friday or something, but I think it's a bit of an ominous sign.
Well, look, they don't usually do things subtly or, you know, if they have something to brag about, they usually want to brag about. How many times did we hear that the NXT TakeOver was the most watched TakeOver of all time? I don't even know that's true, but they said it a bazillion times.
Yeah.
So you would think if it was something that they could brag or they could even slightly fudge the numbers a little bit, they definitely would. So that makes you think maybe not, which, you know, look, this was far from one of the hottest WrestleMania builds, even in the network Peacock streaming era. So that doesn't shock me much, and that wouldn't necessarily be an indictment on the product or on Peacock. But I tend to think if we haven't heard anything by now, and you know, as you said, that, you know, the advantages of digital is that you get hard data, you don't get the extrapolations and all that stuff, and you don't have to call pay-per-view companies to get the guesstimations and all that. So whatever that data is, they do know it, whether they're just, you know, not doing it on purpose or they have a plan. They definitely know what that data is.
And they could lie. Who's ever going to know?
They've built their whole mythology off of 93,000 in a stadium in Detroit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing would stop them.
I mean, there's, you know, whatever the number was, 20 million, give or take, who have Peacock. Just like say 5 million people tune in to watch WrestleMania. Like, or just say vaguely, more people than ever watch WrestleMania. I mean, what's stopping them? I don't know.
It goes to what you're saying, though. Yeah. They're kind of in, like, the drink from WrestleMania Sunday haven't quite worn off yet in a lot of different areas.
Maybe they're all just wandering around looking for Amos and AJ.
That's what it is.
Where do they wander off to?
He's a big guy. It's hard to miss. I don't know how they lost him.
AJ said he's going in the woods to pee, and we haven't found him since.
Well, he walked off the edge of the earth.
That is the joke. That is.
He was right. He was right all along.
Oh, that'd be so. That would be so apropos. All right. Awesome. Our number is 347-215-8558. Email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. I just said that email address with more enthusiasm than Banks introduced Raw tonight, and I wasn't even thinking about it. So join us and give us a call or drop us an email. All right. See, there's that. Where's that recorder again? Let's see if that works. There we go. All right. Let's take our second call here, and we'll go to 443. 443, state your name and where you're calling from.
Kyle from Butler, Maryland.
Hey, Kyle. Good to hear from you. So, okay. How are you feeling about Asuka this week, Kyle?
I'm still not a fan.
Okay. And how about Rhea Ripley? Are you a fan?
Big fan of Rhea. I like Rhea.
Yeah. So go ahead. Yeah, I'm sure you got your own things you want to talk about.
Yeah, well, after really just watching that and watching the Alexa promo she did saying that she's going to come after the women, she's going to be part of the women's division, I said, thank you, finally. It's like, this is what I kind of wanted from her for a little while now. I mean, ever since she's been part of the family, I thought at some point she'll be part of the women's division because her being part of Bray Wyatt was, I found, kind of unnecessary at the time because it was like, I just thought, you know, she's part of the women's division. It was the whole, and she, before Rhea was the best part of Monday Night Raw, now I still feel like the top two women now is Rhea and Alexa. I guess now Charlotte too at a certain point too because she is a good wrestler and stuff like that. But in terms of who I find interesting is on Raw is Rhea and Alexa at this point. And so I know that, you know, some people that I kind of find it's kind of bizarre that they don't want Alexa as the champion. I'm thinking to myself, well, I don't know. With her as champion in this type of character, I think it would be enjoyable. But because before when she was the goddess, I mean, I like that too. You know, I'm a big Alexa fan anyway. But it is a difference. But I just think in this character at this moment that she's playing, it's more interesting to me and more, I find it more fascinating. And as her as a champion could be interesting, but that's like sometime in the future, because I think Rhea could be hopefully a good champion, depending on how long she can put on some like good matches. Because so far with Asuka wasn't all that great, and compared it to Bianca, which is kind of unfair because it's only been 1 week for each champion. When it would have gone to Bianca, she's been, you know, had the best match with Sasha, had a good promo, I thought, and then that feud with them going moving forward with SmackDown, looking forward to. But with Rhea, it's just, I look at Charlotte and Asuka, and how it's like, okay, well, the match she had with Asuka last weekend on WrestleMania wasn't all that great. But Charlotte was good, but we haven't seen that since last year. And then look at Alexa, everything she's doing so far has been fantastic. And again, I know some people don't want her as the champion, which I'm kind of shocked over just of how they've been handling her the last. But what do you think about all that?
Thanks, Kyle. Yeah. Robert, Alexa Bliss, your thoughts on her break from The Fiend, her new doll friend with the photoshopped images of her as a little girl having this doll, and the calling out the women's division and what you think that means.
I thought all of that was actually a net positive on tonight's show. I don't know why, and I know I get labeled as a Bray Wyatt hater, and there's probably some truth to that. When stuff is decoupled from him, it suddenly is enhanced, and I feel like her presentation has been enhanced when it's not, it doesn't have the ominousness of the Fiend hanging over it, which still may be a factor. And we've talked about it many times that I've been on. She executes what she is given very, very well. But this felt, yes, it was still supernatural, but there wasn't the ink coming out of her face. There was a lot less of the silliness, and maybe that goes to the whole stripped down nature of the show the past couple of weeks, obviously with the Photoshop little doll in there that changed it. So I thought that was something to look forward to. I actually look forward to her injecting herself into the women's division because, as kind of has been the theme of the night, it's pretty stale. All the elements of the women's division are stale. They have one new toy, you know, in Rhea Ripley at the top, but it's kind of an underutilized toy. And you have the other two that are, I guess, we're supposed to take as the serious wrestlers. And then you have the tag division, which is just kind of inherently a joke at this point, or definitely a non-priority. I am at least intrigued to see what she can bring to the table. I don't know if she needs to be the champion, although in the women's division, there's not a lot of place. You're either, you know, you're either first or you're last right now in the women's division. So I don't know if there's a place for her to exist without the champion, but still be in a tough spot. But I am definitely intrigued and was kind of pleasantly surprised. I've been since the debacle at WrestleMania of the direction she has taken.
Yeah. I mean, I'm intrigued. Bliss is so good at whatever she does that I'm interested to see what she does without the Fiend and what it means for the Fiend eventually too. On another women's wrestling topic, the idea of a match going on, like in progress, and there's someone in the back who's willing to play a video on the big screen is ridiculous. I mean, I give them points for creativity. They found a new distraction finish, which is go have two wrestlers come out on the stage and just start playing videos taunting one of the wrestlers in the ring. But it's one thing to have a distraction finish. It's another thing to have the director and producers and the company, like, behind it all. They should not – it's farcical. WWE – and it's symbolic of the mindset of WWE that is undercutting Rhea Ripley, for instance, and a lot of the product, which is they don't see this at all like a sport. They see it as a television presentation with these bells and whistles and techniques, and it's tried and true, and we know what we're doing, and the show never stops, and there's, you know, it's just – yet they need to step back and go, we need to get back to simulating a sport a little more. They've strayed far enough from it that it is disinvesting people. I think it's disinvesting viewers from reacting like you should to Riddle upsetting Randy Orton, even if it's a leveraged crucifix pin. Fans have been disincentivized to look at it as a sport, and it's more just sports entertainment, you know, eye candy, in a broad sense. So that bugged me. I mean, yes, it was a vehicle to go somewhere besides just getting out of a finish. It's to build up some tension between Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax, and that's fine. But did that strike you, Robert, as a step too far that now the director isn't in on a huge distraction during the match?
It didn't strike me because it's something that seems a bit commonplace. Not these specific parameters, but stuff like that happens so often in general. Where like I we've joked about it in the past. Like, is every wrestler like have a Creative Cloud subscription and they just know how to make these great videos that they put up, or is, you know, what is the explanation for these things happening? And I think part of the thing is it doesn't matter what kind of story you're telling, you like to have rules of your universe. That way, and when they're broken, it means something. It goes back to what you were saying with the Charlotte and Braun inconsistency. If Charlotte's not off TV for a month, you know, they did that to write off that. That's how we get rid of someone for a quick injury angle. We do that. Those things, they lose their purchase when you do them so often and so flippantly. And that, what you're talking about specifically, Wade, I tend to have a big problem with. Because it's something in general with that stuff, when it seems like it's a collaboration with the whole team there, that you could just kind of clean up with a few things. Obviously, a distraction finish that also leads to it is a bit weird. But I feel like, you know, they get so sloppy with that stuff. And I do look at things. I always try to think of, like, You know, I tried to be like the UFC angle in it. And I know it's, you know, wrestling is wrestling. It's a simulation of a sport, but it still needs to be a simulation
exactly,
of a sport.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be great if, you know, this Saturday, you know, an ally of, I can't even think of the fighters that made it, of Kamaru Usman comes out and plays a video over the board in the middle of the octagon and Masvidal gets the advantage. Like, that would be an awesome thing to see. But
yeah.
It's so farcical that when you take things that far, it takes you out. And then you stop caring, is exactly what you said. Then you do not care about these results. And it is just empty calories that you go through them, and then there's no long-term investment to then want to see what's going to happen next.
Exactly. Yep. All right, our number again is 347-215-8558. If you call us, give us a call or push 1 on your keypad to indicate that you want to be on the program. All right, up next is 860. 860, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from. 860. I think our switchboard is lagging. Let me tell you when it stops spinning. Still spinning. That's a long spin on our switchboard. There we are, 860. Now you lit up. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from. 860. We can't hear if you've muted your line. 860. Going once. Going twice. Call us back.
Fascinating radio. We
all right. Let's jump to Javier, 305. You're up a little earlier than usual, Javier. Welcome. What's on your mind tonight following Raw?
Man, this is a pretty rough episode. you know, it with the only thing I really like glom onto on Raw is the whatever they're doing with Drew, kind of like you know, over on SmackDown with whatever they're doing with Reigns. But, you know, with what with him, like, in the middle of pretty much in the middle of the show facing two members of Retribution, heading, you know, in order to build a match with Bobby Lashley, which has no there's no good outcome of that match, because if Drew wins, then why do it not in front of a crowd? If Bobby Lashley wins, you know, this is the second time Drew loses, or it's a screw job finish, in which case it's going to, you know, upset everybody. So it's like, you know, it's hard to get invested in the character of Drew McIntyre.
I agree. Robert, your thoughts on the state of Drew in general and
yep.
specifically what Javier brings up?
Pretty listless in general. Like I don't really think there's probably like a long-term plan for him feuding with these Retribution or former Retribution guys. He just kind of, you know, randomly teaming with Braun Strowman tonight. This is another instance of very much wheel spinning to get to whatever he gets to with Bobby Lashley. And it doesn't feel like a particularly productive way of getting there. I do fear that Drew is going to be one of those guys that, you know, he'll be considered a made guy now because he had the title and he did do that. But I kind of get the feeling that he's going to get lost in the shuffle. And I think tonight I had that feeling just, put kind of an exclamation point on it tonight. I do feel like it might be a little bit of a rough year for Drew coming up.
What would you do? What's the formula or the what would give a spark to Drew given the available parameters? Javier, throw to you first on that, and then Robert, your thoughts.
I have no clue.
Okay, well,
you know. Because that's the thing. I don't see an out of the Bobby Lashley thing. The only thing I could see is maybe now that Braun Strowman's gotten himself involved, Drew starts feuding with Braun Strowman. Strowman goes heel, you know, because that's kind of he's the new Big Show, and the two of them feud. Keeping McIntyre away from the main event picture. That's about the only thing I think of. But again, that's going to be it's going to be lame. You're going to tune into Fast Break, and you're not going to get a real ending. So yeah, I mean that's I agree, Robert. It feels like it's you know it's like he was definitely like at a higher level. Like you know he was protected on a really high level, as was Lashley, which is why that match at WrestleMania was important. But now with, you know, with that loss and not really seeing like, a way back. Because, you know, I know they like doing their, you know, fight three, four, five, six, seven times until the feud is stale. But, like, just, like, the pacing of it has been...
They wrestle and,
you know...
Javier, they present the matches until people love them even more.
You know, it's like, you know, they don't realize... Because it's almost like you get a trilogy, which is really good. A movie trilogy is really good. And then they make the fourth sequel. And you're like, why? And then sometimes they hit the fifth. And that's kind of, like, what it feels like. So it's like, you know, and it just... It's a shame because... I mean, I don't discount that they'll get him hot for Roman Reigns at some point. That you know, because somehow they're able to pull that trick out of their hat. But you know, it could have been something really special if you have kept him strong, and you know, you know, heading into something like that. But yeah, it's just, I mean, it's been, I mean, probably hearing my voice, it's been like, man, disappointing. And considering the fact that that's like the main reason I had to tune into Raw. You know, it's rough.
Yeah, Dio Madden and Dominic Dijakovic get unmasked tonight, and a previous caller brought it up. I mean, it's good the masks are gone. I wrote this in my Raw report at pwtorch.com tonight. It's good news they lost their masks because, you know, facial expressions are a big thing and variety of reasons. But the bad news is I think it would have been better for them to go away for a month or two and be reintroduced without the lineage to the Retribution faction. Now those faces are now forever tied to being such losers that Ali just flipped out every week at how inept they were. And you can't, I mean, I know Vince just thinks, hey, you know, yeah, Riddle has jobbed out and turned into a joke, but he beat Orton, so now he's red hot. Like, he just thinks he can, and he always thinks that. And to a degree, he's right, but it's with less return than he would if he were more careful and more deliberate and more strategic and respected fans' long-term memories more. But the viewers who are still around have learned, you know, what happens today doesn't matter 3 weeks or 3 months from now. And Vince might think that's a plus, but it's really a minus because people, again, are less invested in what happens now because they know just Vince will pivot and just say, now take this guy seriously. But with Dijakovic and Madden, I just don't know if fans are going to forget that they were part of a inept loser faction during a down period of Raw and hold that against them compared to being gone for a month and coming back with an all-new gimmick. I mean, they don't talk a lot about Isaac Yankem when they talk about Kane. They don't talk about, you know, Diesel when they, you know, it's and Razor Ramon and, oh, you know, remember when he was part of that debacle. It's like, no, there's Kane being introduced as Undertaker's brother. That's the beginning of his lineage. I would have rather had the lineage break. Even if people know, just from a pure sort of canon storyline-wise, I think just introducing them fresh would have been better. And it seems like they're trying to rush them in because they just need the bodies right now. Robert, your thoughts?
Yeah, I largely agree with that. I think tonight was their version of a very compact version of doing what you said, you know, where they were officially unmasked and presented in that way. But they're still those same guys. And as you said, because there isn't a clean break. And I think even if they were going to still theoretically remain those characters, there is a way to rebuild them other than just, hey, they attacked the top guy this week. And so now this kind of means they're tough, but that doesn't really change the fact, like you said, they couldn't win matches. And it's a tricky thing to do in wrestling, especially when the masks aren't like actual masks in that sort of way where the person is completely unrecognizable, where I think, I mean, you know, yes, people who knew what was up know that Isaac Yankem and Kane are both Glenn Jacobs, but there's no way in canon that those things are in any way connected, where I think T-Bar and Mace will kind of have to wear that T-Bar and Mace for quite some time, or there has to be something, you know, that is really long term. Like I'm not sure if the original Aristocrat Triple H is still the CEO guy, but there's a little bit of ambiguity there. But that's like 25 years of establishing that, where you're trying to do this in rapid fashion, and it's unfortunate because you do see what those guys look like, and they look pretty menacing. They look much cooler without the masks than they ever did with that ridiculous getup that they had on. So it's just, and again, I keep bringing it, whether it was The Miz, whether it was a lot of people tonight was about, you know, forget what you just saw. this is, you know, the start of the new season, but, you know, different cosplaying going on. And I don't think that helps for your long-term investment in everything and being totally immersed in that world.
Yeah. Javier, your thoughts on this topic?
Well, and you talked about, like, doing a clean break and, you know, taking the time off. I think it's worse that they unmasked him just because you're keeping the threat. Even if they come back next week in suits, you're keeping the thread of, you know, they're the same people. Had when they were doing the promo, had when McIntyre confronts MVP and says, "Oh, they're your guys. You're using Retribution." If MVP had said, "I'm not, you know, I did not make a deal with Mason T-Bar. I did not make a deal with Mason T-Bar," and then he gets attacked with them wearing suits and said, "I made a deal with, you know, Dijakovic and Dio Madden or whatever," they might give them new names, you know, that, you know, these are the people who they really are. At least that gives you a break from, you know, what they were previous. But then they follow it up with that promo they did in the, you know, afterwards with them just speaking and like, I don't know if I had a stroke and I was just hearing things wrong or whatever they were doing. And they mentioned, you know, talking about saber-tooth tigers. It was like, you know, worse than what Riddle's been doing. So I didn't get that whole thing.
Yeah. All right, Javier, what else have you got?
Good news, at least it looks like for Riddle. Was it just because you're more familiar with Randy Orton's work? Did Randy Orton seem into the match, his match with Riddle?
I don't know. I mean, it didn't jump out to me either way all that much. Robert, did it jump out to you?
Well, I mean, he didn't actually do a lot in the match. He was kind of choked for most of the match. But as you always say, Wade, like, there's the list of the do not do's with Randy Orton is bigger than the things that he does do. And I thought the table spot was kind of cool. I've kind of got off the Randy Orton being completely disengaged every week bandwagon. I think he's risen at least above that level over the last year or so. And my big takeaway from that, Javier, was just the disconnect of, like, and it kind of goes to what we were talking about a minute ago, but the disconnect of how this guy suddenly morphed into badass UFC fighter when, a minute ago, he's riding around on a scooter and just, like, you know, the little kid that you're wondering why the parents brought him on this vacation, and then he turned into that. That's the part I have a harder time rectifying than whether or not suddenly Randy Orton cared this week.
What are you thinking, Javier, as far as Orton's approach? What jumped out to you?
Well, he just overall seemed a little bit more engaged, and it was like the superplex that he gave, and the, you know, taking the Broton the way he did. It looked like he was receiving more stiff shots than he'd be, you know, without necessarily giving receipts. I don't know, just like overall, just kind of felt like, you know, he's like, okay, I'm gonna get him over, you know, instead of just like I'm gonna sandbag him. So I thought that boded well for him. Plus, you know, Riddle gets a win over Randy Orton, and commentary was really hard, you know, putting Riddle over. So this is just like the weirdest push for a wrestler I've ever seen. and yeah, Robert, that the whole thing they're doing is the whole, you know, he's kind of like an idiot savant where, you know, he's a moron, but then he flips the switch and becomes a, you know, badass, you know, martial artist when he's able, and they even mentioned that in commentary today. So I think they're going to be like relying more on that, you know, and you know, now they're going to start making it really obvious that that he's actually like a genius, but just, you know, quirky and weird.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. What else, Javier?
What's his name? Damian Priest actually said was he said that Miz has the face of a pig and nothing underneath his waist were the actual words that he said.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and here I just rewound and replayed looking for the Spanish version of a cojones, and I guess that he didn't say it.
Yeah, he has nada abajo del cinturón, nothing underneath your belt, technically.
Gotcha.
But yeah. Yeah, and then the other thing was with Randy Orton was the whole thing. So he sets the Fiend on fire, ending the Fiend, but it didn't end the Fiend. So why did he think an RKO at WrestleMania ended the Fiend?
I know. I mean, that's the part where I thought Randy was sort of checked out. I mean, you know, he does such a good job trying to make, you know, lemonade out of lemons with this whole, I burned him alive, but he's coming back. And then it's like an RKO. It's like, now that got rid of him. It's just at some point as a wrestler, you're like, I'm doing my best here. I'm doing my best, but this is a bridge too far. The logic is just hard to pull. The lack of logic is hard to continue to pull off with a straight face. It does feel like he's just like, can I talk about wanting to be champion? Yeah.
Again, when you decouple things from the Fiend, talented mm-hmm. performers can shine through. When they're with the Fiend, there's a certain gravitational pull, even throughout the course of a Randy Orton promo, because he did pick up and started talking like a natural human being when he started talking about the title, which was actually refreshing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and even the logic behind what happened at WrestleMania, because, you know, I heard that they changed the ending because originally, you know, Fiend was going to go over, which, you know, for the story is the only ending that made sense. But instead they changed to Randy Orton because Randy Orton was going to take time off is what I remember reading. I'm like, well, that makes no sense. Wouldn't it make more sense if the Fiend takes him out? So I was kind of expecting during the match the Fiend to show up and attack him and take out Randy Orton for whatever period of time. But, that's one of the reasons, like, Raw is right now is like, I got nothing. It's,
I know.
You know, and then it's 3 hours of this, too, Ed. It's 3 hours
yep.
of this.
I don't think a lot about the three-hour thing anymore because, you know, it is what it is. You know, it is a three-hour show. But I was watching tonight going, they don't have enough going on right now to sustain 3 hours. I think this is a chance to be an alarmingly low viewership number. I really do. I think coming off of AEW's momentum last week, you would think that'd be a spark for Vince, and it did not feel like it at all.
Plus, they didn't really have a good lead-in from last week's show. It's not like last week left so much intrigue that you had to watch, you had to rush Raw this week. And then they didn't deliver on top of it, yeah.
Yep. Yep, exactly. Anything else, Javier?
No, I think that's pretty much it. I mean, I agreed with the Charlotte thing. The New Day was just, I don't like being the people, just stop, but I'm going to have to say, just stop, please, just stop. I mean, they look like they're checked out too.
Oh, they do. Yeah. Very much, their facial expressions are like, we're getting paid to be this obnoxious, and nobody who's our boss seems to know that this isn't good, but we don't care because we got our families and our hobbies and a lot of money, and we're going to keep showing up and doing this lame act until they tell us not to. And, I mean, Elias is beating Kofi? Elias is just... He's taken up a roster spot. And I mean, I know he's a human being who wants a job and, you know, all that. I mean, I'm not callous to that, but there's a lot of talented wrestlers out there who are just going to bring something to Raw that Raw needs more than Elias does. And watching Elias beat Kofi, I mean, it almost doesn't matter. Cause like you said, Javier, I just think New Day are so checked out and going through the motions. And it's just a turnoff to me right now. I mean, I find Xavier and Kofi just, not appealing as characters at all right now. So, and then Silver Dollar Pancakes. Oh, it's just eye rolling. It's so bad. Robert?
Yeah, I generally have, a higher tolerance for New Day than you do. Like, to me, the New Day portion of the show is the one portion that I can kind of let my guard down. And I think maybe I've just kind of grandfathered them into that, and I thought that the thing with the bass was a little bit entertaining. But when you combine that too with Elias, it's kind of those two similar magnets that do sort of offset and didn't really seem to accomplish anything. That's generally my biggest problem with Elias is, and not just that he's, you know, his act is worn thin, he's not that great of a wrestler. Yes, those things I think are true. Nothing he does ever matters. Like what was the consequence of him beating former champion Kofi Kingston tonight? Like he just exists in his own little stakes to anything he ever does. Like, for all we know, he could be feuding with Braun Strowman for the 50th time next week, and none of it will have mattered in any way.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's a problem segment to segment with WWE too sometimes, is all too often is something happens and the follow-up isn't there in the show or the next week. And if there is follow-up for something like this, how do you follow it up? I mean, oh my God, Elias is a statement win against Kofi. I can't wait to see Elias get a career boost. No, everyone knows that's not going to happen. Everybody knows where Elias is. He's exactly where he's going to be for as long as he has a roster spot. And when he loses his job in WWE, which eventually happens, unless he becomes like a producer, you know, just retires and becomes a producer, which is not likely to happen. He's not going to, there's not going to be a demand for him. There's only one promoter who will, I guess maybe NWA Power might bring him in. But, I mean, there's not a promoter on this planet who's going to hire Elias, because his only value to Vince McMahon's vision for a mid-card TV filler. And I know it sounds mean, but, I mean, it's just that his skill set is that. It does not expand to AEW or MLW, which just got a clearance on Vice TV. Congratulations to them. That's cool. Even Impact. I mean, I think they'd be like, nah, our roster's pretty full. Sorry, Elias. Yet, here he is, beating Kofi.
You don't think that he could make some kind of indie gimmick out of that?
What indie thing? I mean, if he wants to wrestle for a $100 payoff in front of 80 people, if you put Elias on a poster in a small town, yeah. I just don't think he's going to do that. I don't think he's going to do that after what he's done.
Yeah. No, you might be right. And he's had a pretty, above his talent level of where he's been in the company. I just think that is the one thing, and maybe it's not so true anymore now that we have like actual companies and not just a scattering of indies. I generally think if you have even a ridiculous character, you could probably do something with it on the independent level. But then again, I thought the guy that was Sandow, I can't think of his real name now, I thought he would do great on that level. And it was kind of eerily similar to maybe
Power.
Would go, yeah, there you go. So maybe that is the pathway. Okay, yeah, let me just put my foot back in my mouth and stop talking.
Yeah, I don't know.
On Impact, I just watched like 2 months of Impact to catch up. And like Brian Myers and Matt Cardona are actually doing some interesting stuff on there. I'm surprised I'm actually, interested in the Brian Myers character, the former Kurt Hawkins. And, but I think Elias on there, I'm like, no, I don't, I don't think he could be reinvented in such a way to really, do anything there. No. So,
he just doesn't, he doesn't have the in-ring style that works outside of being a very specific slotted WWE gimmick. I mean, maybe he can go do something on Thriller. I don't know. He can like be off on some stage strumming his guitar, and I don't know. Like, anyway, enough time on him. Javier.
Yeah. I mean, he could be an intro to somebody on one of those things. about it. I had something else, but I forgot what it was. So.
Oh, you can email us.
If I remember, I'll email. Yes.
Yep.
All right, guys.
Cool. Thanks, Javier.
Now. Good night. Have a good one.
All right. Take care.
You broke Javier. That was interesting.
You're saying I broke him or Raw broke him?
Well, yeah, it was Raw, but you gave him the platform to fully self-destruct. They did the damage, and then he came on, and that was you brought him on too early. He wasn't prepared for that.
Yep. All right. We'll read a few emails and wrap up. Matt, South Carolina. There really isn't much to say about tonight's show. Another pretty bland episode that felt like a chore to watch. The one comment I have is they're going to totally destroy Rhea and Priest by saddling them with scripted promos. Make them both so uncomfortable looking. Then what will happen is Vince will say he doesn't see anything in them, when in reality it's all his fault for giving them the scripted promos in the first place. It's an endless cycle with the NXT call-ups. Anyway, thanks for the great weekly VIP content. Keep it coming. Rob, do you think those two are especially susceptible to scripted promos? Does that jump out to you?
Priest, less so, I think. I think the bilingual nature, if they let him kind of keep that going, will keep a little bit of the attitude that he has of the character. I worry about him more just being not with Bad Bunny anymore, where he just will be less of a priority And but I have been and I've been consistently like pleasantly surprised by what he's been given. But I think, you know, he was always compared to Baron Corbin, and there's always like a chance that that could be the direction that he goes. I think for Rhea, it's much more dangerous about the generic side, because I think there's more to lose there too, to be honest with you. I think there might be a case you could say over the last year, Priest is maximizing what he could do, whereas someone like Rhea might be someone that they actually damaged in the process.
Yeah, and I mean, Rhea Ripley is about 15 years younger than Damian Priest, so there's a lot more to lose in that respect too. Yeah, I mean, there's like a 14-year age gap between them. So,
right, and even from a Vince perspective, like Rhea fits the bill of the person that turned heads in the air, like all those sort of things too. So I think there's just more to play with there. Yeah.
All right, Zach in Texas is up. I can hear it now in Vince's voice. Damn it, pal, we got to change Damocato's name, but that Mace and T-Bar, those stay. I don't know if that was a good Vince. It started to stray into Braun or something. I don't know. They're unmasked on TV, and the announcers act as though they've never seen them. Well, I would guess Vink never saw Dio Madden's Raw commentator and has no idea of Dominik Dijakovic's background in NXT or anywhere else. So at least he's believable. I don't get it all. Speaking of things I don't get, the Raw Women's Division is not structurally designed for anyone to grow and succeed. Whatever you think of the rankings in AEW, their existence forces Tony Khan to put varying degrees of focus on the top five women, so at any given time, there's five women who could be inserted into the title picture. There's also squash matches on Dynamite as well as YouTube shows, which TK, Tony Khan, for him to build a woman without potentially turning another named talent into a perennial loser. Do you know the last one on Raw who got built up using true squash matches? Nia Jax. In 2016. Was that 5 years ago? Wow. Before Zabia, she had no aptitude for the business. Zach with his weekly dig at Jax. The women's tag division is arguably worse because there just aren't enough teams to support the division. The two challenger teams just take turns beating each other up or getting cheap roll-up wins on the champ, and nobody benefits from any of it. That's the thing about these roll-up crucifix pins. Like, I mean, I guess for Riddle, it's an upset. He scored a win over Randy, and any kind of win should count for something, but people know the WWE formula, Robert. It's if you get a roll-up win or a leverage win, it's a fluke. It's to agitate the bigger star. It's not a signal that they're really, truly moving up the rankings. It's short of being buried. You're not being defined down, but it is treading water when you score an upset win with a leverage pin. Cedric and Shelton could have been something. And, I mean, I guess the Viking Experience Express Raiders, sorry, Vink, they – you know, they're getting a push, but I don't know. I just feel like something a lot, there's got to be something more to why Cedric and Shelton aren't getting, you know, any kind of serious, even semi-serious protection at this point after being dumped from Hurt Business. Again, they're a team that would have benefited from going away and then showing up on SmackDown in 6 weeks with, you know, new outfits, new team name, and a chip on their shoulder and a mission. And instead, they're jobbers to the stars right now.
No, and I thought it was just curious to have that match anyway this week. I guess I thought more of what they thought of the former Hurt Business guys, because I would just think like maybe that's something you would kind of have a little bit of a build toward.
Yeah.
Just because and the Viking Raiders or Experience Express over there, they're another one on that list tonight that I felt like, you know, a few months ago they were in bowling and basketball matches and they were just complete jokes. And they're another one, like there's a lot of characters they're trying to rehab all at once tonight. And I would think like maybe, okay, Shelton and Cedric maybe aren't the main event of the tag division. Again, the champ, we can't find the champs, so we don't know where they're located. But I think I would think they were more than just your second week opponent that you get through rather quick. The whole thing that happened with Shelton and Cedric, and you've talked about it before on the show, still is quite puzzling because it kind of feels like everywhere the show has gone, they could have just still kind of been with the Hurt Business, other than the Mace and T-Bar thing, I guess, wouldn't have happened. But I don't get the impression that's like so important that they had to do it for that. That whole thing is just reeks of like, you know, people finishing each other's work or something. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, Cedric and Shelton still in Hurt Business, being a dominant tag team, I think adds credibility to the Lashley and MVP act. It doesn't take away. That's why it just feels like there has to be something else going on. Yeah. All right. We will go to JB in Detroit. I think what they're doing with Charlotte is way too much right now. Her angle weave through tonight's show was completely overbooked, and it highlighted her forced acting and over-reliance on bells and whistles at times, like the beating of the ref, the robotic voice, that returned tonight, etc. I think that would be dangerously close to reaching pre-heel Roman levels with fans when it comes to Charlotte. Pre-heel Roman levels with fans. I mean, so he says, love the show, go VIP. Thanks, JB. Well, Roman is being pushed as a babyface. Charlotte's not being pushed as a babyface, is she, Robert? Am I that tone-deaf to WWE?
No. She's definitely
a heel. I just need some reassurance sometimes, given the way things go these days. So, and by the way, she has been suspended indefinitely. So credit to WWE for promptly dishing out proper punishment. WWE sent out a report saying Charlotte is being suspended indefinitely and fined $100,000 following her actions at the conclusion of Raw. It was for unprofessional conduct and physically abusing a WWE official. So good. And Rhea Ripley tweeted, sucker, which is nice, I guess. But I still can't get over Ripley thinking it's cool to interfere in a match for no reason. So I don't know. What was the question? Oh, Charlotte. Yeah.
Charlotte.
I thought this, I'm not as down on her as JB is for sure. I think Charlotte should get a push in the role that she's in. I think this is Raw needs her, and she's has some name value. I don't know what kind of drawing power she has in the circumstances that Raw puts her in right now. I don't know who does. But man, without her right now, I mean, I guess without her right now, maybe they'd be forced to do more with Ripley, you know, more character development. But yeah, I don't know. Robert, your thoughts?
Yeah, her application of the role she's in, I don't think is the problem of anything that we talked about tonight. For her to really be the female Roman, like she's reached that at a few other points. I think maybe a couple years ago when Becky was the heel and she was the face, that was a Roman Reigns type of experience. Or quite frankly, last year when she just sort of beat Rhea with no real explanation, or when she beat Asuka. Those are the more Roman type of things. I always kind of get skittish with that comparison that people make between the two. Now, clearly, she is a priority, I think, in the way that Roman was. And it's like, let's make sure we get Charlotte up to speed. Let's make sure we get Charlotte up to speed. But I don't see her as weighing down the show in that way. And let's face it, she was so much of a focus tonight that I think anybody in that role, when you're that much of a focus on a 3-hour show, no matter how well or how poorly it's executed, you do get fatigued from just that same individual dominating so many different aspects of a single show.
Yeah. We didn't talk about Sheamus and Humberto Carrillo. Robert, I thought Humberto's coming back. They're going to do a program. He's going to get a leverage pin on Sheamus or embarrass Sheamus in a non, you know, in a not an official match, but you know, Sheamus can overestimate him and Humberto's going to cause him to scurry away. He just got the crap beat out of him. And he looked good. He looked good. Like his body wise, he's in great shape. Physically just looks, you know, as JBL would say, if you built a sports entertainer from the ground up, it'd be Humberto. Like, he looks great. That entrance into the ring was fantastic. Right up there with Charlotte doing the handstand somersault out of the ring after the leg lock, after the knee bar. And he's good. I think he's somebody worth protecting and pushing. And he just got destroyed. Like, he was leaving the territory, and they were burying him. Did that come across to you as Humberto's going to get some revenge? Or was that Humberto's not in Sheamus's league?
Unfortunately, I think it'll be kind of a weird case of neither, where he just continuously challenges Sheamus and to this same result. I wouldn't have as much of a problem with doing this if you had faith that there'd be other types of follow-up. As you said, maybe Humberto, you know, kind of like having a stick-to-itiveness that eventually he gets one over, or this happens week after week with these very low-level guys, and then finally somebody gets them, and it comes out of nowhere. I have no faith that they will go in that direction. So this kind of seemed like, you know, they were kind of looking around at who was in the back, and they had to use someone. And I'm okay if the heel is going to have open challenges. I'm okay with it not being good, because I think that's like, you know, a tactic, you know, something that the heel takes away from you, whereas like when Cena did it, it was this, you know, amazing thing that kind of rehabbed his career. I just felt like there was nothing very intentional about what they did tonight with Humberto.
Hector Garza, Angel Garza is back. He doesn't see what Nia Jax sees in Reginald, planting a seed there. They haven't followed up on Garza's other angles particularly well, so I'm not going to get super invested in this one. But he got some TV time short of, you know, by the way, where's R-Truth been? He's another guy who's been missing. you know, and the list of people, you know, no Lashley, no AJ. Sheamus was backstage last week, I heard. I talked to somebody who saw him at least. But AJ and Amos still missing. Anyway, I'm rambling here. Garza, your thoughts on him, on his?
Well, I mean, you know, I'll jokingly say that Nia should be careful because everyone that has an interest in Garza ends up getting released down the road. That's kind of how that's gone for the females interested in Garza. I think it's so weird with Nia because she is she's a weird situation where she not only is a not that good of a wrestler, but when she's involved in these storylines, they're also not very good, and she doesn't execute them very well. But they also don't ever seem to get followed through on quite the way that they maybe intended, you know, going all the way back to the Enzo thing from a couple of years ago. So there might be some intrigue there, but I don't know if I haven't been paying attention. Like, I don't even know what happened with the Reginald thing. Like, what, and I could be just missed something. Like, was that dropped or like where did he go? It just kind of feels like he went away. So, again, it's like I said, about the previous topic, it's all about the follow through. And I don't know, particularly here, if that's something worth investing. He's another guy too that, you know, he kind of pops off the screen when you see him. And I know that's kind of specifically his gimmick. But him like Humberto too, they got so much screen time in the early pandemic era that I think not seeing it for a while has had a bit of a benefit, but it's in what you do to them now when you actually see them again.
Robert, tell people about your podcast. You made some MMA references earlier. I think that ties into what you're about to plug.
It sure does. So every Monday on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup, myself and Rick Monsey, we do MMA talk for pro wrestling fans. And it's a long title, but it kind of explains exactly what the show is all about. For the most part, it's a standard MMA podcast, but the difference being is we actually kind of pride ourselves on being an MMA podcast for a more casual flavor of fan. Yes, we will talk about the fights, but we'll talk about everything else around the fights. We'll talk about the aesthetics, the drawing power, you know, who should be booked where, how did this come across on TV? We had a little discussion about the new shorts that the fighters are wearing today. So we talk about all that. We will occasionally just kind of turn into a straight wrestling podcast at a time. Last week, kind of our annual WrestleMania extravaganza, a little bit extra long show, more of a standard wrestling of wrestling show, breaking down what we like to talk about. But we'd like to give ourselves freedom. If something wasn't that good or not that important, we don't feel obligated to spend a lot of time on it. We like to kind of have a show that is more of an MMA conversation that you would have with a friend of yours, more so than an MMA conversation where you need to study and take notes. We just like to keep things light and provide some entertainment and some banter between the two of us on a weekly basis.
Tomorrow night, by the way, PWT Talks NXT on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. They'll do their live stream after the show. So check out Kelly Wells' report covering NXT on USA at pwtorch.com on Tuesday night. And then after that, join Kelly Wells and Company live for the PWT Talks NXT program, and you can end up joining the program and partaking in it. Just search PW Torch on your podcast app to subscribe, and then you can also stream the show live. Suddenly, I have music in my headphones, and I have no idea where it's coming from, which is just par for the course.
But I thought you're like walking in a mall or something. Like, I don't know what. What's going on in your hand there?
I don't know what's going on. It's weird.
Are you in an elevator?
No, but like there's supposed to be a mic indicating. Oh, wow. Oh, that's weird. It's my watch. My watch just started playing music, and I have no idea why. I just threw it across the room. Now the music is gone. How long has that been going on? Have you heard it for like an hour?
Just when we were when you started the plugs. NXT show. Yeah, it hasn't been like background music for the whole show.
Because if that happens, I'd like to know. I don't know why my Samsung Galaxy Gear watch starts playing elevator music. That is so weird.
Maybe
because
your energy level was low and it was trying to pick you up.
I don't know that elevator music is going to bring me up. It's going to bring me down. Anyway, so the point is, join the PWC Talks NXT crew live tomorrow night. Find the link to the live stream. They start a half hour after NXT ends. The link to the live stream will be at pwtorch.com at the top of the NXT TV report by Kelly Wells. Speaking of Kelly, he's going to join me Wednesday night. His Wednesday nights are free now. So he's going to join me on the AEW post show following Dynamite on Wednesday night, right here on the Wade Keller Posting post show. Kelly Wells making his post-Dynamite show debut. He is, like a lot of people, preferred NXT, now giving AEW more of a chance. Catching up on the show, I want to get his take on what he thinks that AEW is doing well to bring in the former NXT faithful who now have their Wednesday nights free and might be open to watching wrestling. And last week's number was impressive for AEW in terms of how many people who normally watched NXT decided to watch Dynamite. We'll see how that holds up this week. A lot of plugs for NXT, Robert, on Raw tonight. And I'm curious if that translates into a boost in viewership. I think AEW viewership will be down this week, and I think NXT viewership will be up because NXT was on a new night and AEW was on the usual night, and they inherited some NXT viewers. Almost for sure have the numbers on NXT when Kelly joins us tomorrow night too. So we'll talk about what we know so far in the viewership pattern. So that's cool. But in the meantime, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net is joining me on the flagship tomorrow, as I mentioned at the top of the show. Wade Keller podcast at PWTorch.com if you want to get us some questions in by early afternoon on Tuesday. Robert, anything else you want to plug, like social media or I don't know, anything else?
Sure. You can go ahead and follow me on Twitter, Robert Vallejos, at Rob M. Vallejos, RobMVallejos. I always appreciate the post Wade Keller podcast follower bump that I get, so I'm fully expecting that to hold again tonight.
Yep. All right, cool. Give him a bump. Go for it. Thanks, Robert. Always a blast.
Sure.